Welcome.
And her husband.
To the MDS Foundation Patient Forum. My name is Sandy Curtin. I am a nurse practitioner in Tucson, Arizona, and I thought I'd just come out here and enjoy a little humidity. Because it's very, I think our humidity is about 6%, and you can tell from my hair that you have way more than that here. It's my pleasure to have you all here. I am sorry about our tight quarters. We're used to having a much larger room, but we're all going to get to know each other very well today anyway, so we thought it would be a good start just to put you all close together. We have some presentations for you today, but mostly we want this to be very interactive, open discussion, answer your questions. We have Dr. Besa here. We have Dr. Luger, who we're trying to locate. She's probably tied up in clinic. She works here in the Cancer Center, which is why we ended up here in this room. You have resources on your table. This is a new project, a work of passion, big part of my life, called the Building Blocks of Hope, and we're going to go through this in a little bit more detail later on this morning. And so each family should have take one of these to have. I'll be showing you some of the digital capabilities of this a little bit later in our agenda. There is a bathroom. They want us to use the one that's, if you go straight down the hall and through the door, there's one just to the left. They prefer that we have you use that as patients, because there's an emergency cord in case you need that. And luckily, we're amongst many medical professionals here, so we're in good hands. Hopefully, none of us need that, right? Please, if you have questions, jot them down so that we can come back to them later on. Raise your hand, interrupt us if need be. And we are looking forward to a good meeting. We have lunch break that will be at noon, and we're going to try to mosey on out onto the patio here so that we have a little more space and some fresh air. So we'll hopefully get them to set the food up here, and then you all have an opportunity to sit and chat at the tables together, and then we'll reconvene in this afternoon and really just have open discussion and try to answer whatever questions you have. So with that, since Dr. Luger's not here, I think maybe we can start by just doing a quick round of introductions. Tell us who you are and why you're here, and then we'll go from there. So
my name is Mary, and I'm here with Pat. She's the one that has MDS. I'm curious.
Okay. Curiosity is a good thing.
My name's Pat. I had it for like 2.5 years, and I don't have any kind of treatment or nothing yet. I just take B12 vitamins.
Okay.
I'm Elizabeth Betty Diggs, and we're from Greenwood, Delaware.
Okay.
And came up here for this to find out, get some information. And I'm like Pat, I have only had it for a couple of years now, and I'm not on any medication or anything.
Okay, good.
And I'm her husband, Jay. I'm back along.
That's what husbands are supposed to do.
I'm Paul, and I've had a problem for about 8 years.
Okay.
My white blood cells are dropping, and my platelets.
Okay.
So far, no treatment, and we're waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Okay.
I'm Eileen. I'm his wife and part of his support group.
Wonderful.
I'm Linda. My sister-in-law Doris has MDS, diagnosed around February, March.
Okay.
She's getting transfusions every 2 weeks, having a hard time, so I'm here just to learn a lot more about it.
Okay, wonderful.
And I'm Doris, and I have MDS since I was originally starting to have problems in December of this past year, and diagnosed in February. And again, I've been having transfusions every 2 weeks. And I've been on some other medications. Procrit, I get shots every week, and I get I have taken Revlimid for 2.5 months, and it didn't do anything for me. So that's not an option anymore.
Okay.
So I'm trying to find out more information on what options I have.
Okay, well, we'll hopefully be able to answer some of those questions.
I'm Donna, I'm Doris's sister, and I've been helping her through this.
Okay, wonderful.
My name's Joyce. I've been diagnosed the past year, and I am getting transfused. In fact, today I'll get my second transfusion. Dr. Luger is my doctor, and I'm in the clinical trial now with Revlimid, which I started a couple weeks ago and took it for 3 days and broke out hives all over, so I'm off of that right now.
Okay.
We'll see what the next step is.
Okay. All right. Good.
I'm Bill. I'm a husband, and again, part of a support group, and here to find out what I can do to help.
I'm Tara, and this is my mom.
Okay.
I'm Suzanne. I'm a retired oncology nurse. Worked a lot with breast cancer patients who, a couple of them had had chemo and went into MDS as a result of the chemo. And I'm here with Jim.
I'm Jim. My wife had MDS, and I've been just interested in following the development of the treatment for it.
I'm Ray Malis, Warminster, Pennsylvania. I was diagnosed in November of 05, and I'm 83, so I'm still plugging along. If I could instill anything into your minds of those attending here, I've attended altogether, I would say, with MDS and aplastic anemia forums that are put on about 10 around the country. And every chance I get that there's one close by, I go, and I have learned something from every one of them.
Wonderful. Good.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm Ellen. It's my first form. I was diagnosed a little over a year ago, and I just got over Revlimid about a month and a half ago.
All right. Good.
I know a little bit about it because, ironically, my son-in-law, who's 52, was diagnosed about 6 years ago.
Oh, my. Okay.
I'm Phil Miller. After a bout with colon cancer about 11 years ago, the doctor did a little drilling into my bone marrow. Disappointed he didn't find oil, but he did find my dysplasia. And it's been at the same level as it was 11 years ago. Today, except my blood count keeps going down. So that's my problem, is the deteriorating blood count.
I'm Joan, I'm his wife, and I'm here to get a better understanding of living with the MDS. And Phil takes B12, B6, and there's some injection that they offer to give him, but he hasn't started any of the people. Just been getting his blood tested.
Okay.
Watch the webcam.
All right.
I'm Bob Wolf. I was diagnosed with MDS-RARS 8.5 years ago, which means it's a low-risk category of MDS, and it's only a red blood cell problem. And I spent a year or two in observation, but since then I've progressed through pretty much all approved treatments known to medical science, Revlimid, several clinical trials, in an off-label test right now at Columbia, Dr. Rosa, and I'm transfusion dependent. I've gotten to the point where I was having transfusions every 3 weeks, but the experimental drugs appear to be pushing that out a little bit.
Good, wonderful.
I'm Barbara, I'm his wife.
Okay.
I run up and down the stairs a lot because of the low red blood count. I get out of breath, so I go fast.
This is good. It's your built-in workout plan, that's it. Okay.
I'm George Mako. We're from New Jersey, and I have MDS with a low platelet count.
Mm-hmm.
And the puzzling thing is, I'm being treated here, by the way, with a Dr. Hexner, mm-hmm. who's excellent, and also was a doctor in Jacksonville, Florida at Mayo Clinic. But the puzzling thing for me is I've got arthritis, and that's painful, so I know I have arthritis. With the MDS, I feel no anything, so you kind of like put it all in the back. You, maybe about 18 years ago, I was treated for cancer with radiation treatments. From that point on, the blood platelets consistently went down from normal to where I'm plateauing now for about the past 2 years. And that number is in the 20,000s, which is, I guess, pretty low. So we're in a wait and see mode. And I don't take any medications for this. So
I'm Gloria Mako, his wife. He was diagnosed with the MDS now about 10 years ago. And I'm his researcher. Gloria does not like to turn a computer on. So I'm the researcher, and I'm the reach out and emails and talk to all kinds of people around the country for information. So.
I'm Scott, and I have diagnosed with MDS last March. Prior to that, when I had a biopsy that day, they gave me two blood transfusions, but ever since then I haven't had the blood transfusions. But if my red blood count goes down every week, I below 10, I go in for a shot, and I have a problem with my white count too.
Okay.
I'm his wife, Jane, cheerleader, whatever.
Okay, good.
I'm Valerie, and I'm here with Scott.
And I'm Scott. I work for a small pharmaceutical company over in New Jersey, and we have a new drug that's in development for MDS. We work closely with the MDS Foundation, and we're optimistic that in the future it'll become a new alternative for the treatment.
Hallelujah. I'm Steve. I'm with Novartis, and I'm happy to see any developments come along, because it's so important. I mean, it's so meaningful to see patients, little survivors as well. It makes me feel more meaningful about my job and my life.
Good.
And I'm Brenda Hawks. I'm with Diplomat Specialty Pharmacy. And if you're taking Revlimid and or Xjade, you may get those prescriptions filled through a specialty pharmacy like us. And I'm here just to support you and to learn more about what you're going through and what we can do better as a pharmacy.
Okay, lovely. All right, well, wonderful. And I'm going to send your doctor. And I'm Sandy Curtin. Nice to meet you. And I'll let you get started. Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Selena Weber. I am a physician who treats MDS and leukemia here at the University of Pennsylvania. And I'm going to basically give you a general overview of kind of what MDS is and some kind of the ways we think about it, some of the treatments available, and then Dr. Bass and I will kind of open up the forum to some questions. So MDS, or myelodysplastic syndromes, as you know, I thought that the best way to kind of start is to kind of explain to you what a normal bone marrow is, and then we'll talk a little bit about what MDS is. So a normal bone marrow is, if you think of a chicken bone, kind of you break it open and you kind of see the stuff that's in the middle of it, that's your actual bone marrow, and that's where your normal blood cells are being made. And it's supposed to make a whole bunch of different types of cells. It starts off with a very early cell, and then it kind of branches off and decides what kind of cell it wants to become. Decides if it wants to become what we call a white cell, a red blood cell, or a platelet cell. And each of those have different functions. So when you look in your blood, you're supposed to see a bunch of different cells. See, there are a bunch of cells that we call red cells, there are other little cells that we call platelets, and then there are these larger cells that we call white blood cells. Red blood cells carry oxygen. They carry their oxygen on a molecule called hemoglobin, and a normal hemoglobin should be somewhere between 12 and 16, and you will all be familiar with some of these numbers because you monitor them with your MDS. Without enough red cells, you don't have enough oxygen because you don't have enough hemoglobin, and so you feel weak and you feel tired. White blood cells are important to the immune system. We have a whole bunch of different types of white blood cells. Some of them are called lymphocytes, some are called granulocytes or neutrophils, some are called monocytes. typically the number you'll hear about a normal white blood cell count is somewhere between 4,000 and 10,000. And without healthy functioning white cells, we can't really fight infections very well. And platelets, these are these little cells that are found in the blood, those are the cells that help the blood clot properly. If you don't have enough platelets, you don't clot properly. Normally, you have somewhere between 140,000 and 450,000 platelets. We usually don't use the thousands when we talk about them. When we talk to patients, we'll say your platelets are 9, or your platelets are 100, or your platelets are 200. We don't usually use just when we're talking about it. You won't hear the doctor usually say the thousands. You need over 100,000 really to be normal. If you're going for major surgery, you probably need somewhere over 50,000. And once you get below 20,000, you're likely to bruise really, really easily. And if you're below 10,000, you might bleed for no good reason, even if you don't bump yourself. So normally your bone marrow has in the center, you make the cells. Those cells decide what they want to become. That's what's supposed to happen. And so, for example, these are white blood cells. They go through various types of maturation. They're very early cells, or kind of the machinery is the largest part of the cell, kind of the part that determines how the cells are dividing. And as they go through, the, I kind of say childhood, adolescence, and adulthood, only the adult cells are supposed to come out into the blood. All of these are supposed to stay in the bone marrow while they're maturing, and then the adult ones are supposed to come out into the blood and perform the functions of what they're supposed to be doing. So myelodysplastic syndrome, the definition is myelo is just bone marrow and dysplasia is just funny looking. So a myelodysplastic syndrome really just means you have a bone marrow with funny looking cells. And what happens is you make too many cells that really can't do anything useful. That's what happens when someone has myelodysplasia. It was actually first described back in around 1913, but it really didn't get a category until around the 1970s. It wasn't really recognized as an entity. So until then, there were only like a dozen cases in the literature because no one really knew that all of these things were really the same thing. And originally, it used to be called pre-leukemia because that's all really people understood it was. They saw people who had leukemia, and then they saw people who had this beforehand. But in the last several decades, we know that this is a disease that very often never has anything to do with leukemia, so we don't really call it that anymore. So we know that the bone marrow is making too many non-functional cells, and we actually think there are probably about 50,000 to 60,000 cases per year in the United States now, given the way we now define it. It's predominantly a disease of people over age 60. 70% of people who get it are over age 50, and it's more common in men than it is in women. Now again, people present typically with symptoms related to the low blood count. So if someone is anemic, and the majority of patients with MDS will present with anemia, they'll come in short of breath or tired or not infrequently. They'll see their family doctor, they'll have chest pain, they'll go have a catheterization done, and they'll say, oh, before the catheterization, they'll get blood counts and find out they're anemic. Or they'll send them to have an endoscopy done because they find out they're anemic. And there's nothing wrong in endoscopy, and they come to see a hematologist because they're not bleeding and that doesn't explain the anemia, so they try and find out if it's a bone marrow problem, explaining the anemia instead. If they have low platelet, people might come in complaining of gum bleeding or just bruising in places that they didn't hit themselves. Or if they have low white counts, they might come in complaining of infections that just aren't going away. Now, what's supposed to happen is in a normal bone marrow, cells do grow and they die, and they're supposed to replace themselves with healthy cells. What happens with myelodysplastic syndrome is that these abnormal cells just replace themselves, and they don't allow normal cells to be made. We don't know why this happens. In a small proportion of patients, we can identify a prior injury. So if someone has had prior chemotherapy or prior radiation therapy for another cancer, sometimes that actually has caused damage to the stem cells, so they're not able to behave properly. But the majority of patients who have MDS were not able to identify something that caused it. Now, how do we make the diagnosis? Sometimes we can look in the blood. So I told you before that only those mature cells are supposed to come out into the blood. If we start seeing immature cells or cells that aren't formed properly in the blood, then we can sometimes make the diagnosis just by looking in the blood. But more commonly, what we see in the blood is what we don't see. We just don't see enough cells, and if we don't see enough cells, we have to look back in the manufacturing plant to see why we're not seeing them, and so we look in the bone marrow. And by looking in the bone marrow, we can try and get a sense of what's going on. So why do we do bone marrow tests? We do them to make a diagnosis.
We do them to figure out a type, to give it a label. We also do it to see if someone has leukemia and not MDS. We also do it to try and figure out kind of how we're going to figure out what's going to happen next or get a sense of the prognosis of the disease. So what are the tests we do in the bone marrow? Many of you have had these bone marrows, but this is kind of a picture of what we're doing when we're doing the bone marrow test. In an adult, in kids, there's bone marrow in all of the bones. But in an adult, there's really only active bone marrow in certain bones. There's bone marrow in your long bone, so in the bone here, and there's bone marrow in your pelvis. And so those are the really good places to get samples to be able to look and see what's going on in the bone marrow.
Dr. Luger, excuse me for interrupting, but if you could stand on that side, those of us sitting here could see the screen.
Sure.
Sorry. Thank you very much. It's very interesting that we couldn't see through your body.
So the bone marrow, so we take a look. When we don't have to, we prefer not to go into the bone marrow here, although sometimes we will do bone marrow tests in the middle of the chest just when we have trouble getting to the pelvis because of body habitus or, again, if someone's had radiation to their pelvis and we can't get to the bone marrow. So there are two different tests that we do. We use a biopsy needle. We use an aspirate needle. We puncture the skin to go into the bone itself to get a sample of the bone marrow. We do something called a bone marrow aspirate, where we take out a little bit of the liquid from the bone marrow. And that's really good to give us a good sense to look at the individual cells that are found in the bone marrow. You can see up on top, that's a whole bunch of different types of cells that we see in the bone marrow. And then we do something called a bone marrow biopsy, where we get actually a little bit of the bone. It actually gives us a sense of the architecture of the bone marrow. And depending on your age, that should look different. So for example, a 20-year-old should have 80% cells and 20% fat, while an 80-year-old should have 80% fat and 20% cells. So not everybody should have the same appearance of a bone marrow. And then we kind of get a sense, also some people will have a lot of what we call fibrosis, so there'll just be a lot of scarring in the bone marrow itself. We can't see that when we're looking at the cells. And so we need both of those tests to really give us a good picture of what's happening in the bone marrow. So we look at morphology, that's where we actually look at the cells themselves under the microscope. We also look at the DNA, or the chromosomes in the cells, that we call cytogenetics. And those are probably the two most important things that we look at when we're looking at the actual cells in the bone marrow aspirate. This is what we call cytogenetics, or chromosomes. So everybody should have 22 pairs of chromosomes in every single cell in their body, plus either two X chromosomes if they're a female, or an X and a Y chromosome if they're a male. And we look at those, again, to look at the DNA within the abnormal cells in the bone marrow, and that gives us information. So this is someone with normal chromosomes. So you can see they have 22 pairs, and then they have an X and a Y chromosome, so that's a male. This is somebody who has a bunch of abnormalities in their chromosomes. So if you look up over here, chromosome 8, one of them is the normal length, but one of them is short. If you look up, chromosome 5, chromosome 8, you'll see they have an extra third chromosome 8. They're missing one of their chromosome 17, so they've got a short chromosome 20. And you can actually, people know, I'm not one of them, to tell apart a chromosome 7 from a chromosome 8 by where the little clothespin is and what the little black and light parts are. And they have the ability to really, they make this whole map for us and give us that information. And as we know, in patients with MDS, at least 50% were able to find an abnormality in the chromosomes. The most common abnormality involves chromosome 5. You can see you have chromosome 8 abnormalities, 7 abnormalities, and about 20% of patients will have multiple abnormalities. So the real question that people have when they show up in a doctor's office with MDS and they have an abnormal blood count of some sort is, okay, is it going to stay this way, or what do I expect in the future? And that's what we really focus a lot on trying to figure out, is telling patients kind of what's happening next. Where are we now? What can we do to fix this? And what can we expect in the future? What direction can the disease go? So as I said, most patients will present with a low blood count of some sort, and with time, the disease can typically go in one of two directions. With time, the disease will remain stable at some point, and then at some point, the blood counts are likely to get worse. And likely to get worse can mean that if they have anemia and need transfusions, those transfusions might become more frequent. Or it can mean that if they have a low white blood count at presentation, they may also develop anemia, or they may also develop low platelets. It can also, the other direction that things can go is they might start off with a very low number of immature cells, or what we call blasts, and with time, that number of immature cells can increase.
And if it increases a lot, and if it goes above 20% of the bone marrow, we actually call that acute leukemia. And so either one of those things can happen in the natural history of MDS. The time course of that happening is very, very different for each person. And whether or not that is going to happen or which direction it's going to happen is very different for each person. So each person wants to know, what is my MDS going to do? How long will it be before I develop any complications or any possible life-threatening complications? And what can I do to kind of slow this process down? So people have tried to answer those questions. And one of the most useful things that's happened in the last decade or so has been a scoring system. So they looked at 800 patients who had untreated MDS, and they tried to figure out, what can we tell from the time that we look at the bone marrow, the day we diagnose it, that'll give us a sense of what to tell patients. And what they figured out is, if you look at four different factors, we get a lot of information. If you look at the age of the patient, you look at their chromosomes, you look at how many of their blood counts are low, and you look at what percentage of the bone marrow cells are blasts, we can get information about their risk. We call this the IPSS risk stratification, and we get a different score based on the number of blasts, the chromosomes, and the cytogenetics. And that score will then give us an ability to predict what the risk is. If they're a low risk, a low intermediate risk, a high intermediate risk, or a high risk. And those risk groups are risk groups both for developing life-threatening complications from the disease, and also risk of developing progression of the disease itself, how likely it is to remain stable for some period of time. So somebody who has an anemia, no matter how severe that anemia is, but doesn't have bad cytogenetics and doesn't have a high number of blasts, is in the very low group and is likely to stay with low-risk disease for years to come. But somebody who has a lot of abnormalities in their chromosomes and also has all three of the blood counts low, we get more worried about, and we're going to want to do something to slow the process down. So our goals of therapy, again, depend on what we think is going to happen to the disease and also the patient. Obviously, one of our goals, when possible, is to improve the survival. But we also want to control the symptoms. We want to improve the blood counts. We want to decrease the risk of developing leukemia. And we want to improve the quality of life of the patient. We have treatments that really are aimed at doing all of those things. So we have a bunch of different treatment options, and they go from very aggressive, such as a transplant, to just supportive care alone, to a variety of things that we do in between. So supportive care, again, depends on what the patient's problems are. As I said, the majority of patients will have anemia, so you want to make sure there's no other reason for the anemia when someone's anemic. Very often we use agents that some of you have talked about, erythropoietin agents. So your body makes a hormone called erythropoietin normally. When you have a low hemoglobin, it should know to make more erythropoietin, but the signal's not always there to make as much as it needs to make. So we sometimes measure erythropoietin levels in the blood, and if not, body's not making enough to make up for the fact that your hemoglobin or your red blood count is low, extra erythropoietin can sometimes help it make those extra red blood cells. The other problem is, we'll give transfusions if that is not the case. Some people get so many transfusions that they end up with too much iron in their blood, and so sometimes we give medicine to decrease the iron in the blood from the transfusion. You heard a medicine called Exjade mentioned earlier. That's a medicine we typically use to drop the iron if we think it's going to cause trouble. People will have low platelets. There are some medicines we'll try for low platelets. We'll give platelet transfusions. We try not to give too many platelet transfusions, because the more platelet transfusions you get, the less likely you are to have your platelets rise when you get them. And platelet transfusions only last a matter of days when you do get them. So sometimes people say, why am I not getting them all the time? And there's a judgment in terms of when is the right time and when is not the right time to give platelets again in each patient. And sometimes we'll give medicines to thicken the blood, people have low platelets and we're worried about bleeding, just because it'll allow us to do something rather than just give platelets if we're running into bleeding problems. When people have low white blood counts, there are medicines that raise the white blood count, but at least here we typically don't use those unless there are problems with infections.
Then we go on to treating the disease, ways to treat it. There is a small group of patients in whom using medicine to turn off the immune system will actually lead to some improvement in their MDS. We try that in certain situations. There's a group of medications called cytokine inhibitors. So the thinking is that the MDS is caused by signals, chemicals that are signaling within your bone marrow, basically not giving the right signals to the cells to mature properly. There are two drugs in that class. One of them is a drug called thalidomide that many of you may know that was used in pregnancies many, many years ago. For the same reason that it worked there, because it actually turned the signals off in cells, it actually was found to work very well in some blood cancers. Unfortunately, it has a lot of side effects of the doses that are needed to treat MDS effectively. But about a decade ago, there is a similar medicine. So thalidomide has another medicine called lenalidomide, which is also known as Revlimid, which is related to thalidomide, which has been shown to be very helpful in MDS in certain types of patients. It is very potent and doesn't have nearly as many side effects as thalidomide, and initially was used in patients who had low-risk MDS, primarily patients with only anemia. And what they found is that in the first group of about 25 patients, 10 or 11 of them had a tremendous response, like almost resolution of their anemia. But interestingly enough, when they looked at those patients who have this low-risk disease and the improvement of their anemia, they found that almost all of the patients who had the initial response had an abnormality in chromosome 5. And so I talked to you a little bit about cytogenetics. So this is a pair of chromosome 5. So this is the normal chromosome 5. Every chromosome has a long arm and a short arm. You can kind of see here a little bit of an indentation. So this is the short arm of chromosome 5. This is the long arm of chromosome 5. This one is missing a piece of the long arm of chromosome 5. We call Q is the long arm. It's called the long arm because we have P is the short arm and P is petit in French. And they needed something to call the long arm, so since they use P for short, they just used Q for long. So the P is the short arm, the Q is the long arm. So these people have a missing part of the long arm, so 5Q minus. This is another way of looking for it. So this is where you're looking at the chromosomes. This is something we call FISH. This is where you say you're looking at the two fives, and so the green is the two short fives, and the reds are supposed to be the two long fives, and so you can see this person is missing the part of the long five that they get the right dye for. So you have both shorts, but you're missing one long. So that's another test that you do to look for that long arm of chromosome 5. These people seem to have had a really tremendous response to lenalidomide, and so just to kind of go through, we have a whole bunch of different types of MDS. Some of them have chromosome abnormalities. I mentioned earlier the most common chromosome abnormality is an abnormality of chromosome 5. And an even smaller proportion of those who have abnormalities of chromosome 5 will have something that we call 5q minus syndrome, which is an abnormality of chromosome 5 which only has anemia. So this study that was done looked at patients with lenalidomide. They gave lenalidomide to patients with low-risk MDS. They actually had a study that looked not only at patients with abnormalities of chromosome 5, but they also looked at patients who have abnormalities, low-risk disease without chromosome 5 abnormalities. But I'm going to focus on the ones with the chromosome 5 abnormality. If you took a look, they took patients who had chromosome 5 abnormality. They had almost 150 patients on the study. And 67% of them lost their need for any type of transfusion. So two-thirds lost the need for any type of transfusion. And another almost 10% lost need for 50% of them. The median increase in hemoglobin was 5 grams. So people were starting off with a hemoglobin of about 7. They went up to about 11 or 12. So that's a really significant improvement in hemoglobin. It lasted, when they looked at the two-year point, most people still have that response. So it's very, very effective in improving the hemoglobin in patients who have abnormalities in chromosome 5 who have MDS. It doesn't fix the MDS. It doesn't make the bone marrow better. It doesn't prevent the disease from going any further. But it fixes the anemia for as long as it works. It also works, so it provided transfusion independence in a good number of these patients. It was much better in patients with a 5Q abnormality. Most commonly, these patients get low blood counts while they're getting the treatment,
but usually with interrupting the treatment and reducing the dose, you can fix that. And there was also, there are also some responses in patients who don't have abnormalities in 5-HQ. They're not as dramatic, and it doesn't happen in as many patients, but it still is something that's worth trying in patients with low-risk disease if they don't have significant side effects. The other class of agents that's been approved for use in MDS are agents that we call epigenetic agents. So what we know is that you have genes in your cells that tell them how to mature properly. You're supposed to have ways of turning those genes on and off. Normally, some are on and some are off. In MDS, some of that are supposed to be on or off. So there are some genes that are supposed to tell your cells how to mature properly and are supposed to turn off things that are supposed to turn on that get turned off inappropriately. And there have been some drugs that have been shown to turn back on genes that have been turned off when they shouldn't be. One of those classes of genes are called hypomethylating agents. And the two that we hear about the most are azacitidine or Vidaza and decitabine or Dacogen. And what we've shown is that both of those agents have been shown to have responses in all risk groups. They decrease transfusion needs and they improve quality of life. They do, however, have side effects, and so we typically don't use them until the quality of life of the disease is causing more, the disease is causing more problems in quality of life than the treatment would cause. You have to come into a doctor's office 5 to 7 days in a row, you need to get blood counts twice a week, you often need transfusions as a result of side effects of these medicines. So we typically use them in one of two situations. If somebody has transfusion needs that are excessive on the basis of the disease, their disease, their quality of life is impacted by the disease itself, we think about it. Or if somebody has MDS that's gotten to that higher risk level, we know that this will decrease the risk level of the disease itself, and so we consider using it in that situation. So this was the original study that was done. It took patients with all different types of MDS, and it randomized them, so half the patients got the treatment, half the patients did not. Those who did not, if they did not get better, which most of them did not, they were then allowed to give, be given the study drug. And then they looked at responses of patients who were on study. The primary endpoint of this study was a quality of life study. And this is the patients who originally started off not getting treatment. So these were the supportive care. And as you can see, over time, their physical function got worse, their fatigue increased, their shortness of breath increased. Then they started the treatment. When they started the treatment, their function improved, their fatigue decreased, their shortness of breath decreased. So even though they were getting treatment that may have had side effects, their quality of life actually improved while they were on the therapy. A subsequent study took patients only with higher risk disease, compared treatment to other options, either supportive care or forms of chemotherapy, and actually showed that those who got the treatment did better. They had more responses, more complete responses, more partial responses, and they had improved survival. So the group who got the treatment actually had an improved survival rate compared to those who did not get the azacitidine therapy. The most aggressive therapy that we have for MDS is a transplant. And the reason we think about that is that despite the fact that we have treatments available that improve quality of life, that decrease disease, that would decrease blasts, that decrease transfusion needs, none of those have been shown to cure the disease. The only thing that has been shown to cure the disease is a bone marrow transplant. But bone marrow transplant, typical bone marrow transplant, uses high doses of chemotherapy and or radiation to kill the patient's own bone marrow, and it has risks associated with it. So you have to make a decision about if and when it's appropriate to consider that. In a typical bone marrow transplant, what you do is you take a patient, they have their regular blood, they have their MDS blood, you give them very high doses of chemotherapy and radiation, it kills off all of the cells in their system, you give them cells from somebody else, replaces them, they end up with healthy cells, if it works, that's the way they'll stay for the rest of their life with healthy donor bone marrow cells. But it's risky. And some the patients who are most likely to do well with transplant are also the patients who are likely to do well without a transplant and live years with their disease without problems. So you have to make a decision about when is the appropriate time to do it. What this table tries to show you is that those patients who have low-risk disease live longer without a transplant than they do with one. Those who have high-risk disease, the sooner you do the transplant, the better, because they're just going to run into transplant from the high-risk disease. We do have another option these days that we think of, which is something that we call a reduced intensity transplant, which makes it less toxic. In this situation, you take a patient who has their MDS, You give them chemotherapy that doesn't kill their bone marrow. It just allows their body, it decreases the number of cells but lets them accept somebody else's cells. You give them someone else's cells. That person's cells come in and lives together with their own cells and eventually over time will take over their bone marrow. So in the ideal situation, you end up where you do the other way in a little bit of a gentler fashion. It still has a lot of side effects associated with it, so it's still not something we jump to, but it gives us a transplant option in patients in whom we might have not been able to offer a transplant in the past. So it uses the donor immune system rather than the chemotherapy to get rid of the MDS cells, and it aims what we call a graft versus tumor effect, and we've seen some nice responses with it. Primarily, we get answers to what we should do and how we should do this through clinical trials. That's how we really figure out, and we've gotten to where we are today in terms of MDS. We're looking at different schedules of azacitidine and decitabine. We're combining those drugs with other drugs. We're using lenalidomide or Revlimid together with azacitidine, decitabine, and higher risk disease. We're looking at new treatments, new ways to do transplant, new types of agents, and new ways to kind of deal with platelets. So overall, MDS is a group of diseases that's characterized by low blood counts and a bone marrow that just doesn't work properly. The bone marrow studies give us information that's important both for diagnosis and prognosis and allows us to follow the disease. The treatment needs really have to be tailored to the patient. Fortunately, we have a lot of new treatments on the horizon, and clinical trials are really essential for us to really make progress in this disease. I'll stop there.
Thank you, Dr. Luker. Does anybody have questions for Dr. Luker? And Dr. Bass is going to also then take it from there and field some questions. But
should I?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.